Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
After much investigation, we find no any evidence or testimony suggesting that any Secret Service in proximity to President Trump at the rally, who might have been in a position to get him off the stage, knew there was a suspicious or armed person on a rooftop until after shots were fired.
So this is the Trump assassination task force to try to figure out what happened in Butler and then, you know, what happened on the golf course, sort of, but mostly what happened in Butler. And they have just concluded their investigation, and they've produced a report that's made recommendations. I don't think any of the recommendations are particularly surprising to those of us who've been following this. But as always, I think it's interesting to hear directly from the people involved in giving the testimony and explaining things. This is Mike Kelly. He's a Republican from Pennsylvania, District 16. He's the chair of the task force. And, yeah, that's one of the things, is that there is no evidence that any Secret Service knew. You know, because that had been one of the concerns, right? Did somebody in Secret Service know? Did somebody, you know, have information? Did they have awareness? And the answer is, well, no. There's no evidence that anybody knew that he was, you know, in danger. There was a person on the roof with a gun before the shots actually fired. Ronald Rowe, who is the acting director of the United States Secret Service.
The recently completed mission assurance inquiry thoroughly investigated the specific actions and inactions that led to the assassination attempt. Four areas of deficiencies were identified: communications, protective advance processes, command and control processes, and coordination with external entities.
Yeah, all of which we knew, but yeah, the, you know, advance, they didn't properly vet the site, they didn't understand the AGR building's vulnerability, which is a baffling thing. You know, command and control, interaction with local law enforcement, who the Secret Service blamed initially, if you don't remember that. The first answer from the Secret Service director was the stupid local sheriffs. Oh, my God. Unbelievable. And, of course, she's gone. And, you know, Ron Rowe is trying to keep his job because he was the second in command when she was in command. But still, okay, that's where we're at. And, yeah, those four key areas.
Mission Assurance Inquiry identified failures by multiple employees that warrant disciplinary action. The quality of the advance work and preparation for the Butler Farm Show visit absolutely did not meet the expected standards of this agency.
You remember when the university presidents came and testified in front of Congress about the Palestinian protests, the We Hate Israel people, and, you know, what can we do about anti-Semitism on campus, and, you know, are we allowing hate to exist and all this? And they were very mealy-mouthed, and they got excoriated, and then they all gave up their jobs. And then the next wave of presidents, you know, to testify, kind of realize, oh, man, we got to put on the show. Well, Ron Rowe's putting on the show. And I don't mean that he's not being genuine. I mean, he at least understands that the job of the Secret Service director at this point in history is to completely admit you botched everything. And to say it like you mean it.
Let me be clear. There will be accountability, and that accountability is occurring. It is an extensive review that requires time to ensure due process. And the pace of this process, quite frankly, it does frustrate me. But it is essential that we recognize the gravity of our failure. I personally carry the weight of knowing that we almost lost a protectee, and our failure cost a father and husband his life.
Correct. You know, Trump lived, but Corey Comparatore did not live, and two other people were wounded in the process, and that's on the Secret Service, right?
I have reflected extensively on the agency's substandard performance during the advance for the Butler rally. I have implemented numerous systemic and strategic changes to prevent these failures from ever happening again. It has been my singular focus to bring much-needed reform to the Secret Service.
And, of course, at a certain point when you're hearing all of this, you start to ask the question, but why did you have to have a protectee almost get killed for this to happen? You know, what was the culture like? Why couldn't you do anything before that? If you're on the right side of this, were you on the right side of this before, or were you part of the problem before? And look, people can come to Jesus, you know, metaphorically. People, I mean, in reality too. But people can, you know, suddenly realize, oh, man, we got to reform everything. and be the voice of reform. Of course, what you'd kind of rather have is somebody who was screaming about it before it, you know, when it was unpopular, right? Kind of like, you know, Christopher Wray leaving the FBI and Cash Patel coming in. You know, maybe the second in command at the FBI is aware of the problems and is going to reform it. And he has a, you know, a conversion experience, and then he's going to make reform. Or he just bring in a guy who's been screaming reform for years. And I don't know which is the better answer, but I will say this. The one sort of shared conclusion from both sides of the aisle on this thing, and they did work as a bipartisan task force. They really did work together. It was evident from the hearing and from the prior hearings. They all seem to be much more comfortable now. They think that the reforms are happening. They think the Secret Service is improving. They think that the right questions are being asked and the right problems are being identified. For example,
it is also my intention to reconstitute the Secret Service's culture such that training is routine and expected. That was how it was done when I was operational in the Presidential Protective Division. And somehow along the way, we became disproportionately operational in comparison to time allocated for training.
What it's getting at there is if you're always out doing protection, you're not improving the skills, you're not sharpening the saw, you're not making sure that you're doing it the best possible. And you might think, well, being operational is good. No, not always, because being operational takes time away from everything else. And sometimes that other stuff is more important for making you more effective. And that's what he's getting at.
The world is a dangerous...
Oh, sorry. This is the one I want to play first.
As I have publicly stated, the Secret Service historically has had to manage its operations by doing more with less. That is not consistent with achieving a no-fail mission.
Correct.
And since becoming acting director, I've made it my priority to eliminate the do more with less mindset, which has had a long-term degrading effect on our workforce and our protective operations.
You know, kind of the what the Marines deal with, or what the Navy deals with, or what the Army, the Air Force deal with, which is, well, this is what we've got. Let's manage to make it work. Well, when the Secret Service has a you can't fail mission, you can't just scotch tape and duct tape and, you know, baling wire and chewing gum and make it work. You deserve to have the, you know, very best things, because this is a national security issue. Protecting the president of the United States is not just protecting his life. It is protecting the leader of the country, right?
The world is a dangerous place. The responsibilities of the Secret Service are critical to the national security of the United States. It is important that decision makers fully recognize and appreciate the vital role and significance of the Secret Service in our nation's security. The terrorist, the nation-state actor, the sniper, the lone gunman, the lone wolf gunman, they must be lucky once, but the men and women of the Secret Service must be perfect every time. That may not be fair, but that's the world in which we operate in.
And it's tempting to say the solution to that is more money. More money may be important, but money is not necessarily the issue. But are we willing to pay more money to make sure that they don't fail in a high-threat environment? Well, you know, probably the answer is yes. So Kelly asks the most obvious question and gets what I think is probably the correct, most obvious answer.
After July 13th, what do you think was the most concerning failure of that day, looking back on it? And had you been the one developing the game plan, what different moves would you have made strategically to ensure that it was a safe and secure area?
So I think what is glaring to me is the failure to recognize the significance of the AGR building, to recognize the significance of proximity to what was perceived to be the middle perimeter of the site. The lack of recognizing that.
In case you don't remember, that building that the shooter was on, that he was able to get access to, that was not secured by anybody, that was not in the view of the sheriff sniper team that was facing in towards the crowd, and also the fence line area, parking lot area next to it, where people could basically just walk up and look through the fence at what was going on inside without having been screened, right? You know, the idea that, you know, if four terrorists wanted to come up there with assault weapons and just lay down a field of fire, they could have killed everybody inside of there, and certainly the president, pretty quickly. There was nothing preventing. There was no visual impediment. There were no vehicles in the way. They didn't do anything to obstruct the view. Like, just all of that kind of stuff, that there was simply no identification of that as a source of a threat. Massive failure. A failure so big it's hard to explain. He says it was advanced work. He says it was a culture of, you know, get by, not a culture of excellence. There's a variety of factors. Of course, that was the reason that a lot of other people speculated. You can't explain that except through some kind of deliberate act to try to allow this to happen. They say there is simply no evidence of that, but there's an asterisk to that. The Department of Justice has information about both this attempted murder and the other attempted assassin that they are not releasing to Congress. They say it's not this and this and this, but they're not releasing the evidence that they do have to assure Congress that it's not whatever. That puts a cloud over all of these conclusions, quite frankly, about whether there was any kind of inside help or not, whether there was any kind of active negligence or not. You know, how do you explain this pattern, like not putting snipers up on the water tower? How do you explain that people have obstructed views and they don't report it to their, you know, some of that can be explained by culture failure. You know, if you've ever worked in an organization where raising questions and problems and, you know, bringing them up has been encouraged, and you've ever worked in an organization where that kind of stuff is discouraged, where they shoot the messenger instead, I mean, you know, Escambia County, Ramey Edler brings up the problems and they shoot the messenger, right? You know, if you've ever worked in a place where the culture is healthy, you know the difference. And employees learn when the culture is bad. They learn how to not say things. You know, and you need a culture where anybody who's involved in an event has the right to say, the president shouldn't be coming out here, right? Okay, so, you know, what else happened? What other things didn't get done?
Effectively communicate to local law enforcement that we need to have uniform presence out here, that we shouldn't have people that close, unscreened, on the curtilage of our site, not having better line of sight mitigation, having something scrim along that fence line that was to the 3 o'clock, having uniform law enforcement presence out there, having special attention measures by those law enforcement officers. That to me is glaring. And those are basic tenets, fundamentals of what advance teams are supposed to identify. They are supposed to identify hazards, risks, and then mitigate those risks effectively, either by using law enforcement and coordinating assets or taking matters and making sure that it is mitigated and that risk is taken out of play. We did not do that on the 13th.
And all of that is true, including things like not putting drones up, not being willing to accept help from the sheriff's department, not having a unified command structure because you had actually two separate tents that people were in.
Actually, now we have done some organizational changes as well. I've created an aviation unit, right? So that's making sure that we're putting out those drones up in the sky to give us visibility. If we don't have a drone, or if for whatever reason a state or local wants to fly a drone, we're going to allow them to fly that drone as well. The whole point is to get, and this is what we did not have on July 13th, and it's one common operating picture.
Yeah, and so because you don't have one picture of the entire scenario, it's very easy to let gaps occur, overlaps aren't recognized, whatever. Yeah, putting drones up in the sky, very important, especially in New Jersey. Sorry, I couldn't resist. You might get help from somebody, whether it's Iran or the aliens, who knows. The key to having that single picture of what's happening on the ground.
On October the 5th, we knew exactly where every law enforcement officer was because they were using a Blue Force tracker. We have that same platform. So having that domain awareness now moving forward at our protected sites, that is a change that we are operationalizing.
That's good. It's not done. Operationalizing means they're in the process of implementing it. It's kind of frustrating to think that some fairly old technology used by our military is still not available to the Secret Service, not in full form. Jason Crow, who is the Democrat leading the committee, he was an Afghanistan vet.
Right, in Afghanistan, for example, that's what we had. You know, we were oftentimes working with FBI, intelligence agencies, different countries across, you know, hundreds of kilometers in instances, but we had a platform, an actual physical platform that served as a virtual command post. So it doesn't matter where you were or who you were, you could look at that and see where everybody else was and share information. And it's just wild to me that in 2024, you know, our nation's premier law enforcement agency on July 13th was using text messages on their personal cell phones, literally sending emails in some cases to deliver real-time information and scribbling messages on paper and not using a system. So it's good to hear that you've implemented that in part on October 5th and going forward. But can you tell me, I mean, are you looking into more advanced systems and platforms that I know exist on the DoD side? I know DoD has these.
Right, and they are. I mean, now, after this catastrophic failure, but again, this culture of not being willing to, or not, the supervisors aren't willing to hear the questions and the subordinates aren't, you know, recognize that, and so they don't ask the questions.
You know, I'm struck by the fact that there were numerous things that occurred on July 13th, and I'll just list some examples. One was the counter UAS operator did not have formal training on that system, and when it didn't operate, they just simply went without it being raised to anyone else's awareness. And the counter, the agent responsible for emplacing the counter sniper team placed the team that had responsibility for the sector that included the AGR rooftop, which is where the gunman fired from, placed it in a location where there was a tree blocking substantial portions of that rooftop, yet nobody said anything.
You just, the more you hear about what didn't happen properly on that one day, it's mind-boggling.
You know, when I was in the Army, there was this this culture and expectation that when you were on a mission or in a training range, that anybody could say something at any time if they saw a safety risk. You know, it's the old adage, if you see something, say something, right? So a private could stop a training mission or even a real mission if there was a life and safety issue. Commercial pilots have the same thing, that if you're in the cockpit, you know, anybody can say, hey, there's a problem, to the captain, or stop something from happening. I'm struck by the lack of that culture on July 13th. That if you're a counter sniper and you've been emplaced in a position that actually doesn't allow you to see entire sectors of the position that you're responsible for, why aren't people saying something? And it happened on numerous occasions.
So what's the solution to this? Well, there are a lot of answers. You know, better training, an emphasis on training, an emphasis on perfection and professionalism, raising questions to be allowed and encouraged. More staff, which they are hiring a lot of people, better technology, which they are implementing. They did much better at the second assassination attempt, although still there's a lot of questions about that. So we're making a lot of progress. I actually think this has been a very productive response to that horrible failure. But, you know, how close are we to where we really need to be and where the Secret Service has always been perceived to be in the past until all this came to light? You know, we're not there yet, is my own assessment of it. 527 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
If a new Volkswagen is on your holiday wish list, there's no better time than now to sign and drive a new VW home for the holidays. Yep, the Sign and Drive event at Peakmore Imports offers you the 2025 Atlas and 2025 Atlas Cross Sport, both available for a 36-month lease with zero down payment, zero due at signing, and zero first-month payment. It's as easy as signing your name and making room under your tree or your driveway. Plus, the 2024 Tiguan and Taos crossovers are also available to sign and drive home for the holidays. And the 2024 VW Jetta SEL is now discounted a full $3,000, bringing its sale price to a low $28,451. The holidays are here, and the Peakmore Imports family wishes you and yours a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Sign and drive is for a 36-month lease for qualified customers through PCI. Excludes tax, title, license options, and dealer fee. No security deposit. Example lease for a 2024 Tiguan S is $379 a month for 36 months. Discounts on Jetta before tax, title, and associated dealer fees. Offers valid to January 2nd, 2025.
Hey, can you blow up some balloons for Jack's party?
I can't. I'm so congested.
You need Sinex Saline from Vicks.
Sinex Saline Nasal Spray?
Yeah, just Sinex. Breathe.
Sinex Saline instantly clears everyday congestion associated with colds and year-round allergies with a gentle, ultra-fine mist that's no mess and easy to control.
Daddy, we need more balloons!
On it!
Enjoy life's important moments without congestion. Try Sinex Saline from Vicks. Just Sinex. Breathe. Use as directed.
Find the perfect gift for every gun enthusiast at Jim's Firearms. From the precision-loving sharpshooter to the adventure-ready outdoorsman, they've got something for everyone. Equip Mr. Tactical with the latest accessories or surprise the concealed carrier with stylish options for safety and comfort. Don't forget the high-tech Target Master and the noob just starting out who would greatly enjoy the Mantis shooting system. The Man Caver and the kid at heart would love their unique gifts, too. Can't decide? Grab a gift card. Jim's Firearms at the corner of Sorrento and Blue Angel Parkway.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WER-TV, News Radio Team, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 5:30 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, after days of rumors and speculation, the University of North Carolina did confirm yesterday that Bill Belichick has been hired as their next football coach, according to a post on GoHeels.com. The six-time Super Bowl champion and former Patriots coach has agreed to a five-year deal.
If you're a UNC person, are you happy?
I'd say so.
Probably so.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President-elect Trump expected on Wall Street this morning to ring the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange.
This comes as the final Fox News polls of the year show just how much the economy matters to Americans. 60% of respondents saying it's extremely important for Trump to focus on lowering prices once he gets into office.
Fox's Brooke Singman reporting. The president-elect also expected to be named Time Magazine's Person of the Year, an honor he also captured in 2016. More than 1,500 firefighters trying to douse the massive wildfire that is destroying everything in its path in Malibu, California. Matt Greenberg lives there. He's helping to put out the flames.
There's guest houses on fire. I was trying to help put that out because it's just in little hot spots all over on other friends' property.
He joined Fox and Friends first. So far, over 4,000 acres have been burned. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we have 37 degrees. It is a cold one this morning in Pensacola. A motorcyclist is in critical condition after a crash on West Michigan Avenue yesterday. That happened at around 11:30 on Wednesday near the intersection with Memphis Avenue. FHP says the rider was headed westbound at a high rate of speed, passing other vehicles, when a Pensacola man pulled out of a convenience store parking lot. Troopers say the driver could not see the motorcyclist because of their speed. The bike crashed into the side of the SUV. The rider was taken to the hospital with critical injuries. The driver of the SUV was not hurt. A Texas man has now been sentenced to 20 years in prison for that DUI crash in 2022 that killed an Escambia County deputy. Tristan Parker previously pleaded guilty to DUI manslaughter, driving with a suspended license, and DUI causing bodily harm. He was sentenced to 180 months yesterday for that crash. Parker had been in jail in Okaloosa County since it happened. The crash killed Escambia County Deputy Kevin Ray and seriously injured his 15-year-old daughter. They were on their way home from a football game when the crash happened. Former Congressman Matt Gaetz appears to have a favorite in the race for his now vacant seat in Congress. On a video message posted on X this week, he said Jimmy Patronis is willing to give up a statewide elected position to seek the District 1 congressional seat, and that is something that he believes may have never happened before.
His bosses ranged from Key West all the way up to Jacksonville, all the way to the end of Perdido Key, and he is willing to trade a statewide elected position because Florida One is that special.
Gaetz said there's a lot of talent that's going up for the job. There's currently 10 Republican candidates that will face off in the primary next year. Gaetz decided not to return to Congress despite his nomination for Attorney General meeting a dramatic end last month. He now starts a new career as a talk show host on the One America News Network in January. Citrus production is down across Florida. New report out from the U.S. Department of Agriculture says the Sunshine State is expected to produce about 6 million fewer boxes of oranges this season compared to the previous one, which ended in July. Hurricane Milton's destruction is listed as one of the main reasons behind the anticipated decline. In addition to oranges, the new forecast is also expecting a drop in grapefruit and tangerine. If everything's correct, Florida's citrus industry would experience the smallest harvest this season in more than a century. 534 at News Radio. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be seeing a nice chilly day today, starting off in the 30s. Highs today near 56 degrees, plenty of sunshine. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 42 degrees. For Friday, mostly sunny skies, high near 61. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 52 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, 37 degrees. Our next news at 6 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Jennifer Sporta with Your Money Now. The NASDAQ composite crossed the 20,000-point mark for the first time ever yesterday, in part to Alphabet's quantum computing breakthrough. Wall Street analysts predict the shares can run further. OpenAI says ChatGPT service has recovered after hours-long outage. This after OpenAI said Apple was releasing an integration of ChatGPT into their iPhone's iOS operating system. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman said that the company's technology was reaching 300 million active users each week. Service Titan prices IPO at $71, above the expected average for its 8.8 million shares. Tech IPOs have been rare in recent years, and investors are looking for signs of life heading into 2025. Service Titan previously agreed to terms encouraging it to go public quickly and prevent dilution. Futures are slightly down as the Dow yesterday was down 99, the NASDAQ up 345, and the S&P 500 up 49. That's Your Money Now.
We're sharing more than ever before during the 2024 Subaru Share the Love event. Now through January 2nd, when you purchase or lease a new Subaru, Subaru will donate $250 to your choice of four nationally recognized charities: the ASPCA, Make-A-Wish, Meals on Wheels, or the National Park Foundation. Or choose our local charity, the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association, and Anderson Subaru will add an extra $200 to Subaru's donation. And for every routine Subaru vehicle service visit, Anderson Subaru will donate $5 more to the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association. So far, we've donated over $175,000 to fight breast cancer right here in Pensacola. Get a great vehicle and support a great cause at the Subaru Share the Love event now through January 2nd. Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
$250 donation for new purchase or lease. Promotion ends January 2nd. See retailer or AndersonSubaru.com/share for details.
Why pay more for prescriptions? Stop overpaying and start saving with SingleCare. It's easy. Find your prescription on SingleCare.com, show the coupon at the pharmacy, and start saving. SingleCare works at pharmacies nationwide and is completely free to use, whether you have insurance or not. So the next time you fill a prescription, check SingleCare to make sure you're getting the best price. Take control of your prescription costs. Go to SingleCare.com or download the free app today.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at David's Catfish House. David's Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit David's Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
This is Wendy with Barbary Plumbing wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, this is Brandon Cherry.
And Taylor Cartwright.
We're the owners of the Culver's here in Pensacola and Milton. Just wishing everybody happy holiday season.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Hi, this is James Zirkel with Seville Power and Lawn Equipment wishing you happy holidays.
Ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay.
Let's take a look at some of these texts. 437-1620. Somebody says, red light cameras are theft. Legalized theft, nothing else, is one of my concerns.
Andrew McKay.
It's not that hefty of a concern, because I always think the idea of getting tickets, whether parking or moving, that you can't dispute is a problem. So the question is going to be, how accurate, how reliable are they? How many false positives are we getting? And, you know, time will tell, I suppose.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings 5 till 9. News Radio Pensacola.
Informative, local, dependable.
Down with the DC talk. Down with the DC talk.
does that mean we have? We have a 3 million. We have 3 million people going through a 1.5 million airport. That's what we have right now. And so we're very, very excited to get this project going. We're on track to break ground on this expansion in July.
So that's Mayor Reeves at the State of the City address last week talking about the airport, something that, you know, we've been talking about quite a bit recently because we are expanding, building a new terminal to, you know, expand the capacity significantly. Now, that's not the only thing that we're going to, you know, be needing to do. We're going to need like a parking garage, which is going to be expensive. There may be other things as well. But that number in particular kind of caught me in a way that I hadn't thought about it before. And so I want to talk with the mayor about it. We talked with Mayor D.C. Reeves yesterday. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks for having me. I'm a victim of my I-10 cell phone signal. I'm on the road to Leadership, Florida, Jacksonville, so bear with me.
It's fine so far, and if it gives up, we'll give you a little bit of grace. Okay, so all of a sudden I have a question that I hope you have a good answer for. We are a 1.5 million capacity airport handling 3 million people a year. That's bad. We are. I mean, it's good. It's a good problem, but it's a problem. We are expanding. We are doubling our capacity by adding a new terminal. I assume at the end of this construction, we will be at a 3 million capacity. But by the time that's finished in, what, 4 or 5 years? We'll be above 3 million. Mm-hmm. Won't we just be getting up to being still behind at that point?
Well, first of all, you know, I think five new gates. Let's just look at gate passenger traffic. We have this. We have a million more people going through the same 12 gates than we had a decade ago, right? So, and as a matter, and people ask me this question all the time. They say, "Well, wait, does that mean we can't take one more flight at the airport?" Our gate capacity is not the issue. When I say 1.5 million airport with 3 million, I understand why a citizen would say, "Well, that must mean we can't stuff any more flights into the airport." No, that actually is less of our problem. What we're talking about is baggage handling, baggage claim, the seating areas, things like that.
Okay.
So when we go from 12 to 17 gates, I wouldn't assume that that only gets us to 3 million. And, you know, I think that that helps us. And of course, there's long-term expansion plans where you could do another terminal to the other direction. And so there's plenty of growth opportunity that can take place. So from a how many flights come in and how many seats leave this airport, we don't have a capacity issue at 17, but the desperate things that need to happen, the central utility plant, the baggage claim, those are the types of things that might fit more into that concern or argument than the actual terminal expansion itself.
Okay, well, that's reassuring because I didn't know that was the nature of the constraint, and so I appreciate you explaining that. That's great. That's a good answer. I really like the agenda item that you guys are working on for tomorrow night. That's going to be it's kind of like you've taken the Huts for Our Friends concept that Caleb had, and you're kind of turning that into the city project for how to provide temporary structures for homeless. You correct me if I'm wrong, but the short version is with American Rescue Plan money, good to be using it. You've created an account with a company that produces these things, and then you're going to buy as required or requested by local agencies, like let's say Waterfront orders 10 of them. The city will own them. You're going to place 10 of these little kind of, you know, personal huts outside at Waterfront, and then that expands their capacity and hopefully spend all the money tailoring the product to what people need. And if an agency ever goes away, you can always take them back and use them somewhere else. Do I basically have it right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the most important piece of this is, once we came to the realization, this has been 1 year in the making, once we came to the realization that a low barrier shelter was well beyond a one-time $1.1 million allotment of money, that we're talking about multiple millions of dollars annually. Once we made that decision, then we moved to the next best thing, which is how do we house people today? But, you know, and so that's why I like this. It gives us the flexibility to meet need where it is and not paralyze ourselves waiting years or multiple years to solve a today problem. So if we can increase capacity with the folks that know how to handle this and case manage this, I think that's a good thing. And again, we get 2 years. We have to encumber the funds by this month,
right?
But we have 2 years to get those dollars expended.
Yeah, I mean it's a low barrier shelter without having to create a low barrier shelter. And
correct.
Have all the ongoing maintenance.
And that's the way I see it.
And to embed it with our existing, you know, agencies, which I, you know, again, it seems like a win all the way around.
You guys are working on the new resident satisfaction survey, including a couple of, I thought your questions you mentioned for parking were pretty good. You know, would you rather pay a buck an hour and park close to your destination, or would you rather pay nothing and walk a couple of blocks? That's a good, you know, market tester kind of question. I like that you're willing to ask the question and find out what the audience says, but this is going on now, is that right? Or it's going on soon?
That's correct. Yeah, it's going on now, and it'll go through January. We normally run the survey in the fall, and it's for city residents only. The first question, I know, Andrew, you'll appreciate is, instead of asking you what council district you're in that you probably don't know,
right.
We say, is your garbage can green or black? That's your first question of the survey. Giveaway as a sneak preview. You know, this is for city residents only because obviously we want there's conversations in there about things that would only affect city residents. So,
sure.
But it's very valuable. I think we had about 1,600 people put a survey in last time. There'll be everybody in the city is going to get a postcard that'll have QR code on it in the coming days. And of course, you can go to our city website and click on that link. So we certainly would appreciate it. And I would hope if anybody knows me well enough after these 2 years, they understand that we do take it. We don't just ask for the sake of asking. We do take action with these things. But that's why they're vitally important to me.
Agreed. I think it's good. And by the way, something else I really like is I remember you mentioning I think it was the state of the city, but you mentioned that on every agenda item for the city council, the idea is to put which of the 8 strategic objectives this one advances. And I think that's exactly right. That's how you reinforce the significance of those strategic objectives. And that's how you prove that you're, you know, aiming at the mark every time you go through a city council agenda. Mayor Reeves, one of the things that has been in the works for forever and has never quite come to fruition is the turning of Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and Davis Highway into two-way streets. What is... Pardon me, I had to sneeze. The holdup, as I understand it, is we're trying to... money, okay? And trying to align what we're doing with FDOT's, like, resurfacing? Is that the idea? Or to give us time to get grants? What is the plan here?
Yeah, exactly. So why is there a timeline? Why is this now finite versus just a visionary thing? Well, it's because they're due to be repaved and they're state roads. And the conversation that really preceded me as mayor was, hey, you know what? If you'll get these resurfaced and make that a higher priority, the city will take over possession, which, as you well know me, Andrew, that makes a lot of sense for FDOT. Anytime you could give up the maintenance of a road and give it to someone else, you know, that's usually a good thing. So that was the trade-off. And that resurfacing was going to be, these numbers may have changed, but at the time, maybe $3.5 million for that to happen. But that's to keep them as one way. To go to two-way is an additional $4, $5, maybe even $6 million. And you're like, well, man, I you can imagine the first question I asked as a non road engineer, street engineer was, man, how's that possible? You know,
right.
But it's just a couple stop signs, and then they walk you through it. You're like, oh yeah, like all the turn lanes, whether it needs to be signaled now or not, whether all of these different things, and a huge cost of it is really the north terminus. It's where they converge up there near Fairfield.
Yeah, just for people who are not sure, where they come together at the north and kind of merge into Davis Highway right at the Fairfield on-ramp, like we'd proposed a roundabout there maybe, like that, figuring that out is a challenge. So sorry, just for people who haven't been following this, go ahead.
Yeah, it's okay. And so the bottom line is, why is there a time crunch? The time crunch is, if we're going to design the road as a two-way, design it, you know, and you think 10%, give or take, of design for construction, $6 million-ish, about 10%. So it'd be an additional $605,000 to $600,000 of design money to get it designed as two way. So that is what is moving. The county plans on supporting $200,000. We have put the ARPA $400,000, and we caught the last boat off the island. In order, if we don't do that now, you can expect for the next generation, and probably as long as I'm alive, that those roads will stay two-way because they'll be brand new roads. I'm sorry, one-way. They'll be brand new roads, and it would make a lot of sense to then change them right after. So we caught that deadline, and we said, hey, this is important enough. We have I-110. There's a reason that those don't need to be one-way roads, and if we want to recreate these and make these neighborhoods safer and more vibrant, then we need to get the many interstates out of them. And so that's That's the goal. And so we were able to kind of seize that opportunity, use some of that ARPA funding. And then now, the next big elephant is going to be go find the construction money. Now, we'll have a couple years to do that. But we've got to make that decision right now. If we want to make this a priority, we can't wait 6 months. We got to decide now. So that's what we've done.
Okay. So not only an opportunity, but a deadline, kind of both at the same time. And as you say, the last chance to do this for probably 20 years or more, or 30 years or more. So that, which makes sense. And finding grant money theoretically shouldn't be that hard, because we're putting in massive public safety improvement. You know, the roads are going to be far less dangerous
Correct.
To drive on, and those kinds of grants are available. So, okay, that makes sense to me. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you about is the sports complex / Bay Center, which you have talked about. I just thought you made such interesting comments about the Bay Center. I haven't ever heard anybody say it quite that way, and I haven't had a chance to play the clips. So instead of playing them, I'm going to have you explain it. But you don't just want the sports complex to be in the city for obvious reasons, because it benefits the city, and for, you know, logistics reasons as well. But you said some stuff about the Bay Center that I thought was important. Can you just tell people, kind of as a sports guy and also as an infrastructure guy, why the Bay Center, what you think the future of the Bay Center is? Which is not your baby.
Yeah,
it's a county project, right? But it still affects the city.
And it's why I'm going to, you know, and I want to be at least indirectly involved. And, you know, I joke, sometimes you can have more free-flowing opinion when you have no dog in the fight. And from a Bay Center standpoint, we have very minimal dog in the fight, except what happens there has a great impact on the city's future.
Right.
And so, as a sports writer, I believe, is there a demand for some type of mixed-use facility? Sure. Is there a demand for conference space? I would presume, and that those are things that can be studied. But ultimately, the critical mass and the repair of our Bay Center, if we want to get to the question was, you know, what do you think about sports activities and their return on investment? And my belief is there's absolutely return on investment, but we are behind and significantly so. I mean, go look up and down the Gulf Coast. If that's the way we want to go, and I do believe in that, we've got now four or five hotels being threatened downtown that have some real smoke to them that I expect will happen. We got hopefully something happened at the Grand Hotel. But to me, the bottom line is, you know, we should make a commitment of that critical mass, and we should take care of the Bay Center that. As you've heard me say many times, Andrew, find me one citizen in this county that says, man, you know, I think the Bay Center's in ship shape. I mean, it's beautiful. I've never heard a human being say that. We all know it's 40 plus years old. And why aren't we taking care of the things? But priority one should be this, something that could be a crown jewel. Priority two would be, let's create critical mass at the same place for these events to happen. And if we want to invest in sports tourism, then I believe in that, and let's do it. And let's do it in a thoughtful way. I think that thoughtful way is to do it around the same site.
Yeah, and I particularly appreciated you saying, like, you thought that basically the bones of the Bay Center are good, that renovating the Bay Center is going to cost a lot. But when it gets done, it'll look like a brand new facility, instead of the notion of raise it and start over, which is, what, $300 million? So that's just not going to happen.
The structure, people say, why don't you bulldoze it? Yeah, that will never happen. I mean, it
right.
will be, the bones are fine, those have been inspected. And as you said, if you close your eyes and open them at a renovated facility, you wouldn't know that it was the same building if it's done to the degree that it needs to be done. And we're talking more of a $40, $50, $60, $70 million type project versus a $400 million
right.
project that I don't even know where that funding would come from.
We always like to end with a couple of frivolous topics, a couple of a lightning round thing. First one is, when you're sending an email to a friend, do you sign the email the way you would sign a letter, or do you not sign your name? Like even if it's an email thread back and forth.
Ooh, at most I just put BC, but I would say no to a friend. Probably not.
Probably not. Okay.
Do you?
Yeah, usually it's weird, but it's kind of like I'm writing a letter, even on the replies. Typically. Yeah, no, I don't go formal. I don't go quite that way. Yeah. When commencements take place, this is our topic yesterday, when commencements take place, the mortar boards that the graduates wear, the little square hats, A lot of people have taken to decorating them with all kinds of things these days. Pro con on the decorator. What do you think? Should they be individual or should they just conform to the whole group and make them black?
I don't know. I feel like there's other ways to, you know, when I did the commencement speech the year prior, you know, people would have different scarves or different, you know, some other things. I don't know about the hat itself. I think you'll want, to me, you'd want the authenticity of the original hat down the road.
I got you. And I'm going to surprise you with this one. I don't know if you caught this conversation. We talked about this recently, but what would you think of football getting rid of punts? Because the punt is a way of rewarding bad offense and giving them the ability to get out of bad field position without actually advancing the ball. It's a kind of social safety net for bad offenses.
I would put that in the same basket. I know you're a baseball guy. I would put that in the same basket as this crazy idea about letting
the golden batter
come up during the game. Like, completely changes the sport. I mean, no, I couldn't be more opposed to that. I mean, maybe I'm old school or traditionalist, but I mean, the idea that you'd have to go for it on 4th and 9 from your own 5-yard line because you don't want to, get rid of punts would be outrageous, sacrilegious.
Oh, I love it. Sacrilegious. Outstanding. D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola, city council meeting tomorrow night. Mr. Mayor, as always, thank you so much for the time and for doing what you're doing. And we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
And, of course, that was yesterday, so that means the city council meeting is tonight. 437-1620, that is always my phone number. If you are thinking about buying or selling a home, you want to make sure that you make a good choice, get the best results possible, and especially, like, right now in December, where people are really starting to think a lot about Christmas, you know, is now the right time to list a home? No. Christina Leavenworth, I heard her on Pep Talk say the same thing, and I asked her in person. She's, no, really January, February is better. And especially now as we get so close to the holidays and bowl games and everything, people are so distracted. Just wait. It'll be a lot easier to sell your home in January. You'll get better offers, probably a better price. And that's the kind of thing you want. You want a good, honest answer from somebody who really knows. How do you know? Well, if you sell 175 homes in a year last year, you're on track to sell about that same number again this year. You know what's normal, what works, what doesn't work. You've perfected a system that really gets those best results. That's why you hire a realtor, because they know things you don't know, and they can tell you, you know, that would, you know, maybe that seems like a good idea, but why don't we try this instead? You know, so we can get those good results. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leaven Rinke Realty.
Is your house making you sick? If you have high indoor humidity levels due to excess moisture, it could be. High humidity levels cause mold, mildew, and bacterial growth, among other things, and are very hazardous to your health. If you have condensation on your vents or windows, blistering paint, or cupping hardwood floors, it's time to call Southern Climate Solutions. They'll customize a permanent solution to control your indoor environment, eliminating the hazards of high humidity and excess moisture. Find them online at southernclimatesolutions.com.
Visit Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze for custom engraving and unique gifts. Specializing in creating extraordinary keepsakes, their expert engravers bring your vision to life with elegant monograms, personalized messages, and logos. Whether it's custom drinkware, engraved glassware, or home decor, each piece is crafted with attention to detail for any occasion. Perfect for birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, or corporate gifts, Prim and Proper ensures your gift will leave a lasting impression. Stop by their Gulf Breeze location or visit them online at primandproper.com.
Pensacola Little Theater is thrilled to bring to you the timeless tale of A Christmas Story, December 12th through the 22nd. Join us as we follow young Ralphie Park's heartwarming and adventurous quest for a Red Ryder BB gun in 1940s Indiana. Against the backdrop of the holiday season, Ralphie faces the classic childhood challenges of bullies and family dynamics, all while holding on to his Christmas wish. Secure your tickets for this highly anticipated show either online at PensacolaLittleTheater.com or by visiting the PLT box office.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Beautiful, Clark.
Oh, talk about pissing your money away. I hope you kids see what a silly waste of resources this was.
Well, that's too strong, 'cause it is my favorite holiday. But all this year's been a
Good morning, 5:59 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, 13 days to Christmas. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, firefighters continuing to fight that wildfire in Southern California. The Franklin Fire now has burned about 4,000 acres around Malibu. And the Pentagon pushing back on a New Jersey congressman's claims that foreign adversaries like Iran may be behind the New Jersey drones. Republican Congressman Van Drew says he believed Iran launched a mothership.
Yeah, the Department of Defense denied that.
You're listening to